It's an interesting song, and it was one of those filler songs, but one of the ones that I kind of got attention from. I like it.
Fuller wrote an album cut, but you know, I too, in fact, I've toyed with the idea of making a little medley out of that one and a couple of others in the show, because I keep going a little bit more toward Union Gap stuff. I'm realizing, as time goes by, that CBS, Sony values those records highly, and they seem to, at strategic points, put another album out, you know, with a previous one or something, you know, to make it an attractive package. So there are a lot of Union Gap songs that I think are quite viable as far as the show is concerned, so I'm starting to add some of them.
I actually always liked Don't Make Promises, too, which was a Tim Hardin song.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice song, too.
Excellent tune. That was one of the first three that we recorded. Woman, Don't Make Promises, and I believe it was a song that I wrote, or Joey and I wrote, called I'm Losing You.
Or Pain Drops, maybe.
That was on the first album.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, but not the first three recordings.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Because Don't Make Promises, I know that I don't even know if it was released on a thing before the Greatest Hits album came out, was it?
Don't Make Promises, I think, and Woman were the A and B sides of the first record.
Oh yeah, I know what it was. It wasn't in stereo originally, and it was released in stereo on the Greatest Hits album.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
In fact, in the beginning, when the record went out, being a two-sided record in those days, and of course radio stations were different then, you know, they could choose what they wanted to play. So we got split airplay, and some stations were playing Woman, and others were playing Don't Make Promises, which in its own way is a neat statement, because they liked both sides of it. The problem with that being that one side could dilute the play on the other side, so there wasn't really a focus. Well, fortunately, we found that there was a guy in Columbus, Ohio, who was a Civil War buff, and he liked the picture on the record sleeve, and that's another story. I fought for that picture to be on there, because I knew that there were a lot of records going out to people, and if you just got a brown cover, what was going to make you stop and listen to it?
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I got CBS to put this very authentic-looking picture in sepia tone on the Woman. Jacket backed with Don't Make Promises.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he loved Woman, put it on his station as a pick to click, and it went to number one in Columbus, Ohio. So that was when the Cleveland regional office of Columbia Records says, hey, they called me in San Diego and said, we have some real interest in this record, finally in a market here that I think we can make something out of. So we went to Cleveland, and I went with the regional promotion people, and we met a lot of DJs and program directors and, you know, promoted the record.
Mm.
And that was where it really broke out in the Ohio area. And so that's how Woman first became a hit, because Jerry had said to me, you know, we're getting split airplay on this darn record, and he says, we might have to go back in and record again and put another record out so that we can and take advantage of whatever momentum we have going. But fortunately, Woman did get that momentum going.
I guess there's a lot of stories about what happened with you guys and Jerry Fuller, because mm-hmm. it seems like when Jerry never worked again with the group at one point, and there weren't that many hits following that. So what happened with the group and Jerry?
I'm sure that if you talk to Jerry, there might be another slant on the story, but essentially what happened was that we did a record called Don't Make not Don't Make Promises. We just talked about that.
Don't Give In to Him?
Don't Give In to Him, right.
Right.
And I wasn't particularly knocked out with that as a record for the group when we did it, but CBS and the management, everybody said Jerry is responsible, and in fact was responsible, and I give him credit for that, the preceding records and the success that we had.
Mm-hmm.
So Jerry has always been, and I assume that to this day he still is, a my way or the highway kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he said, I've been through a lot of songs, this is the song that we're going to do, and like it or not, we're doing it. you know. So I kind of, you know, said, well, okay, we will do this song. We did Don't Make Promises. I mean,
Don't Give In to Him. Yep.
And released it, but we didn't see the same success. Now, it has become one of my favorites, and the reason is because of its unusual chord changes and things, and I think it's actually a really good record. I just didn't agree with him in those days. When it came out, we had had four records prior to that that had collectively sold, I don't know, offhand, probably 8 million records. So I said, this record isn't going to do as good. Well, it didn't, and I kind of thought I was right. So, you know, I made a little bit of a faux pas there. You know, I shouldn't have been so high on myself in that regard. But that was what started the demise of Jerry working with me in the group. The record following, was it the record following? No, let's see. Yes, it was. A record called Heaven Down Below. And I looked at the lyrics and I just said, I don't like these lyrics. I'm not crazy about this song. I don't want to do this song. I was right about the last one. I think we need to move on and, you know, do something else. I forget exactly what. But at any rate, management said, sessions have been set. You need to show up so that you're not in breach of contract. We went to the recording session. I told Jerry, I'm not doing this song. And he said, okay, my way or the highway. And that was where we parted company.
Was that the 40-piece studio orchestra song?
Yeah.
Because I guess he assembled this huge orchestra. And
yeah, most of the stuff was orchestrated with up to about 30 pieces and sometimes more. So I just didn't believe in that song, and I thought that I would stand up for my personal creative viewpoint.
I got to tell you that Don't Give In to Him was my least favorite Gary Puckett song, and mostly because of the lyrics. As one of the players out there, I didn't like that song. Telling women not to give in to the guys. Hey, come on now. You traded you, you know? That's the way I look at it. Now, after you guys left, after you left Fuller, you still had the This Girl Is a Woman Now. That was Dick Glasser produced, right?
Yes, correct.
So that was a big hit, too.
Yeah, it was. And I think that somebody told me along the way that they had written that song with me in mind. I don't know if that's really the truth or not, but I did feel that it was a really good song for the group had been, you know, coupled with Dick Glasser as producer-artist, and we went ahead and did our thing. Dick, of course, had a different ear, and when you listen to those songs, I don't think his producer's ear was quite as clear as Jerry's, but he did make a good record out of that, so it was a big hit. And
you wonder, though, why didn't he grab any other Milrose Bernstein compositions and try to, you know, follow that same song time sound like he did before, like Fuller did earlier?
Yeah, I don't know. That's hard to say. Maybe Milrose and Bernstein didn't have another song that he felt were, you know, of the quality or something like that.
Possibly. You know, it says in a story I read that you guys played the White House. Well, which president was that for?
Nixon.
Really?
Yeah. He was going to host Prince Charles and Princess Anne, and I forget the occasion, but it was their visit, you know, to the U.S. and some sort of détente, we'll call it. That was the word of the era anyway, I guess. But they decided to have this big celebration and party for the royalty, and of course all of the political figures of the day were present, and they asked Prince Charles what group he would like to hear at a concert, and his response was, I'd like to hear the Guess Who. So they got Burton Cummings in the group, and they asked Princess Anne who she would like to hear, and she specified Gary Puckett and the Union Gap.
Wow.
So they hired us both, and they built this huge stage out on the South Portico, the lawn out there, and it was just a splendid, beautiful evening. I forget what month it was, but it was summertime, so the concert was outside, and it was a it was a pretty memorable day in so much as we, you know, spent the entire day at the White House. In fact, I ended up walking around with my camera in my hand and just snapping pictures. And when I'd get off the beaten track, some Secret Service would come out of the bushes, you know, and say, I think you need to walk that direction, you know. But it was pretty cool. I walked inside the White House by myself and walked around into the different rooms and just had a wonderful time. We did a sound check, you know, and that night it was me and the Union Gap plus the Marine Band horns. And I got to tell you, it was just incredible. Incredible. The Marine Band, of course, you know, they're A1. They are just amazing.
Did you get to actually talk to the president when you were there?
I did speak to him for a moment, as a matter of fact, and it was actually in the afternoon when I was walking around outside in the grounds, and he came walking past with a bunch of Secret Service people, and I have a feeling that it was right about that time that he was embroiled in the Watergate thing, because mm-hmm. He looked ashen is the only word I can come up with, you know, like there was so much going on in his life. Now, I can't imagine being president of the most powerful country in the world to begin with, you know, but it's got to be a huge, huge weight on your shoulders. But then when you have something else that's, you know, a cancer growing at the core of it.
Right.
But he
did he know who you were? I mean, was he familiar with your songs and things?
You know, I don't know. I was a little stunned by his appearance, you know, coming around the corner, and I shook his hand and said hello, and I don't remember that I really had anything to say to him, nor did I think that he'd be interested in anything I had to say. As though I, you know, felt that I could say, well, Mr. Nixon, you know, tell me, which records of the Union Gap did you read?
And wouldn't you be surprised if he starts saying, well, young girl, get out of my mind. You know, that would have freaked you out.
I'm not a crook.
My love for you is way out of line. That would be kind of funny.
But it was, it had impact on me, you know, meeting him, shaking his hand, standing there in his presence for a moment. And then, of course, we walked through the reception line that night and shook hands with the prince and the princess and the Nixon family and, you know, others that were the higher up. So it was a pretty adventurous night.
Now, did you, I remember when I saw you with the Happy Together tour, the oldies package they had. That was a great tour. I really enjoyed that. You guys were in the circus, as they call them, out in Boston, the South Shore Music Circus, the Cape Cod Melody Tent.
Right.
And I enjoyed that concert immensely because there were some great people involved in it. And I know that you actually opened for the Monkees with their big 20th anniversary tour, too.
Right.
What's going on now? I know that folks can go to GaryPuckettMusic.com and check out what's going on, but any upcoming things we should know about?
Well, I've got I have a new / old album that I'm going to put out there as soon as I can get the artwork is being finished right now. I seem to have communication problems with somebody on this regard, but it's a really wonderful album that I wrote with my brother David. He wrote the words and I wrote the music, and I produced it at a little studio in San Diego in 1974 and 1975, and I was not trying to be commercial, but I was just trying to write what I thought was creative and great music. Some of the songs are commercially written, but they weren't aimed at the commercial market. Am I making myself clear?
Okay.
So at any rate, this album was finished and took it around to all the record companies in probably 1975. Maybe it was 76 by the time they heard it. But they all turned it down.